And this is Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria, 91.9, KTCB Tillamook, 89.5, coastradio.org, wherever you are in the world. Are you somewhere fishing? Okay, well, hope you're listening in. Squamish, are you listening? East 66th Street? I hope you're not fishing. God knows what you'd be catching. Anyway, folks, we are here at Coast Community Radio. We are so excited because this is the maturity date for the Fisher Poets Gathering. It's their 21st production, and we have been broadcasting this for a number of years and hosting the Fishers since the beginning, because this is one good community, and we all work together on it. So tonight, let me tell you right now that tonight you will want to tune in. However you listen, coastradio.org or on your handheld device, however you do that, or on the radio, because between 6 and 10, if you're not in the neighborhood, you can just listen in the comfort of your own home or boat or wherever you are. Time for Arts Live and Local, and it's a beautiful winter day. It's precipitating, drizzling, something wet is very gently coming down. The weather report says from 3 o'clock until tomorrow morning, above 500 feet, there's a winter weather advisory for Willapa Hills and the Coast Range of Northwest Oregon. Total snow accumulations 2 to 6 inches, with localized amount up to 8 inches. I don't even know what that means. Heaviest accumulations will be above 800 to 1,000 feet from 3 p.m. through Saturday. Meanwhile, it's 40 degrees, so nothing is sticking on the ground except us. Thanks for being here. Going to start out with a little bit of music. I want to remind you that the Seaside Jazz Festival is in full swing right now at the Convention Center, the Elks, and the Best Western in Seaside, Oregon, and it is marvelous. So that's today and tomorrow, and a little bit on Sunday as well. And if you can handle it, you can do both festivals. Yes, that is my plan.
Expectations with a clear frame of mind. Devoid of illusions, consciously whole. Not divided in psyche, under illusion's control. Because illusions of separateness, yeah, they'll run down to the sea, through the streets to the rivers by the gutters retrieve, disguised in the sewers as connectivity. Disguised in the obvious simplistics of need. Disguised in the fleshes and the hearts of the sea, like this fisherman's heart. Yeah, like other such breeds, at the heart of predation is a heart naturally. Strong from the beats of its activities and the fitness of passions occasionally pleased. Strong from connections that are felt when I ease past that sense of illusion. But it's all separately. Because we are the ocean. Yeah, we are the sky. People, where are those salmons? The sun's going by. Ours is to live as ours is to die. Because we are the same as it all. Without I.
And that was one of our regulars, Steve Schoonmaker. And I don't know, maybe he has a new album again this year. Every year he seems to show up with a new album. This one's actually from 2012, and it's always a delight to see him here. Well, speaking of seeing, this is your chance to see some Fisher art, because I have in the studio Corey Arnold, and also, pardon my cough drop in my mouth, Elizabeth Herendeen. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, great to be here.
And Corey, I know you've been on radio before. How about you, Elizabeth?
I have over the years, I've been working on wild salmon, both conservation and marketing for over a decade. So, yeah,
oh boy.
I've been on a few times.
Are you going to be sticking around for a while?
I'll be here through the weekend. Yeah.
Just the weekend.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we have lots to talk about, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
But my feature, and Elizabeth is an extra gift, the feature was Corey because he has a gorgeous exhibit at Imogen Gallery on 11th and Marine Drive. It's been up for a couple of weeks since the second Saturday opening. But today, at 4 o'clock, will be a reception. Will you be there, Corey?
Yeah, I'll be there 4 to 6
4 to 6,
today.
Okay. Yep. The exhibit will stay up, so if you can't make it today, that's okay. But it is fun to meet the artist and be able to figure out what he's done. And I want you to tell us. Name of this show is Aleutian Dreams from Dutch Harbor, I understand.
Yeah, it's mostly Dutch Harbor and Akutan and life out there. I worked as a crabber from 2002 to 2010 out of Dutch Harbor on a boat called the Rollo. And I've since moved on to running an operation in Bristol Bay and whatnot. So I quit crabbing back in 2010. But I made a book out of the work I shot while I was actually fishing out there, released it, you know, many years ago. And I decided I really wanted to go back and actually spend some time exploring and taking the photos that I always wanted to take, but I was always too busy fishing and working. I mean, it's just impossible to pull out the camera when you're needed on deck and, you know, in some of the bigger storms and whatnot. So it was really nice to revisit. And over the last few years, I would spend a month every winter and kind of go out on different boats from trawlers to crabbers and kind of photograph the the crazy bald eagle scene.
Oh, my
eating
God.
Garbage.
Tell me, is that eagle actually blind, or is that just the name you gave because of the look in the eyes, or what was the story there?
Yeah, the title, the image you're referring to is like an eagle. It's blinking, actually. So it's an eagle on a boat that was part of, you know, all around me is maybe two dozen eagles, and they're feasting on like pollock, leftover pollock in a net. And as I inched closer to this particular eagle, it was kind of screaming at me, and it was standing its ground. It didn't really, it didn't want to fly away. And I ended up, you know, standing like 5 feet from it as it screamed at me. And I titled it Blind Leader. I actually made the shot right around about a year ago today. You can imagine.
Whoa.
Inauguration time. So there's actually
perfect. Yes.
Injected a little
the
bit
eagle's
of... The
eagle's a lot more attractive, though, I must say.
Yeah, I was like in a bad mood while I was shooting the series.
Okay,
last
now
year.
Let's back up here. You're on these boats, but this time no one's asking you to help out with the actual boat, or do they know? I mean, how could they not when they know you know how to do things? They let you alone and they let you just take pictures?
Yeah, it was kind of hard for me too, because when you're on a 11-day crab trip and you know, you're just watching people work all the time and you're used to the experience of having to sort of outwork,
right.
Try
Pitch
to outwork
there.
Each other to sort of get respect on the boat. It feels really kind of
interesting,
strange. But for insurance reasons, like the owner wouldn't let me touch, you know, necessarily like get in there and start throwing pots around or anything.
Poor you. So you had to just take pictures.
Yeah.
Must have been tough, I'm sure.
So
backing up even further, which came first, fishing, photography, or do you have a whole nother life that we don't even know about?
That's
very old. I just want to tell my listening audience, Corey, I have no idea how old he is, but he's not very old from my perspective. Go on.
Thank you. Well, I grew up, you know, there's a lot of pictures of me wearing diapers holding like bluegill that I caught in lakes in Southern California growing up. So my dad was really into fishing. It was always sport fishing, though. Mm-hmm. So my whole life in photo albums, there's me like holding different types of fish as I'm slowly, you know, moving from wearing like Garfield t-shirts to like my punk skateboard years to now. So I've always had fishing around me, but I first experienced Alaska when I was maybe 15 years old.
How'd that happen?
We were obsessed with fishing in general, and Alaska, you know, is kind of the ultimate sport fishing destination as well. So like my father and I went to Alaska for like a 2-week summer halibut and salmon trip, and that's when I started to see these huge fleets and these amazing communities nestled in these, you know, incredible landscapes. And growing up in a kind of a track home in Southern California, you know, I just wanted to escape and have some real adventures, you know. So that's what drew me to the commercial fishing world.
And then, and the photography, where'd that come from?
Kind of a similar thing. It was kind of a, my dad's little hobby on the side. He was an avocado grower and ran a like a tropical plant nursery. But on the side, it was like fishing and photography were his big hobbies. And I sort of picked up both of those, and I just took them beyond a hobby and turned them into a profession.
So did you have yet another job as well? Like, I know some people fish in the summer and teach school or something like that, just in case the fishing doesn't go well or photography doesn't sell or whatever.
Well, it's odd. When I started crabbing, I was oddly living in Norway. I had a Norwegian girlfriend, and I was living in Norway. I was working as a carpenter in Norway, and I was flying over and doing the crab job in the winter for the first 4 years. And then shortly after that, I moved back to the States, and my photography started to gain some traction. And so it was really
nice, very nice,
keeping busy with photography the rest of the year. And
was your dad proud of you at some point?
Yeah, he's really proud.
I should hope so. So the photographs, there are some very large photographs in this exhibit, and you've been shooting for a long time. How did you choose? How do you let go? How do you not include some? I mean, I can see every single one that's there. I understand why it's there. How do you let go of some of them? Or you have another show going on in Kentucky or something now.
Yeah. I think editing is one of the... Nowadays, when you can shoot a million photos so easily and so cheaply with a digital camera, it really comes down to editing that... decides like who you are and what your defines your style. So you can, you know, I just spend a lot of time really carefully placing images together, and I'm looking at what works together and also individually, and from theme to how the colors work together to how the compositions work together. Okay. There's just so many variables I can't even.
Right.
It's mostly kind of instinctual though how it all comes together.
Have you? And then I'll stop grilling you, but I'm really curious about this. Are most of your photographs, not obviously with this show, but in general, in your life, from Alaska, of nature, of animals and creatures, or not? Because you have landscapes as well. You have the rope in front of the... I don't know how you got that one, but, you know.
Yeah, I like to mix... I don't so much shoot pure nature photos. You know, there's usually some sort of, except for some of the seascapes, you know, there's usually some sort of human element involved or, you know, there's, I'll take pictures of nets within the landscape in Alaska or ropes and sort of, they feel like landscape photos themselves because like in Dutch Harbor, there's piles of trawl nets all over and they're all these amazing colors and they sort of, you know, they look like little mountains in the foreground of a greater landscape in the background. So, but yeah, I mean, I also shoot a lot for magazines and I do a lot of assignments that are very people related, but I like the experience of telling a story and going through a whole narrative with a lot of different ideas in it and not just a same subject over and over.
Well, I highly recommend everybody get over to the gallery. You can also go, Imogen is I-M-O-G-E-N, Imogen Gallery in Astoria. If you're not here, take a look at the website because Terry does a good job. Terry Sun does a good job of posting some of the photographs. You can have a look. And you can contact Corey on your own. But if you are in the neighborhood, get over to Imogen Gallery while this show is up. It's really gorgeous. Aleutian Dreams. Now, Corey's got something else going on, and he brought in a friend who is helping with that. But she has a whole nother story that is a lot of us who've been involved right here in the Columbia River estuary, dealing with liquefied natural gas and stuff like that, have been very aware of pebble mines. And Elizabeth Herendeen is here and is giving a workshop tomorrow morning from 11:30 to 12:45 at the Heritage Museum. Welcome, Elizabeth. Which this is a treat because I wasn't, you know, I had no idea who you really were. I didn't get a chance to do research on you. So Salmon State, what is that?
Yeah, so I work for a small nonprofit in Alaska called Salmon State. And we have staff all around Alaska, including Homer, Anchorage, Juneau. I live in Sitka, Alaska. And our mission is just to make sure that Alaska's wild salmon are around for future generations. And Alaska remains the salmon state because, mm-hmm. as folks here in Oregon and the Northwest know, Alaska's really it when it comes to having thriving, healthy, sustainable wild salmon populations. So we do a lot around conservation and habitat protection, and also just promoting policies that are going to make sure our fish and fisheries and fishing communities stay healthy in the future.
Great. Bravo. Thank you so much. So you live where? You said Sitka.
Yep.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Corey, where do you live these days?
I live in Portland, just a couple hours.
Oh, how wonderful. Here. That's yep. easy. I wonder, I still have 503 in there somewhere.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's terrific. Okay, now, whose project is the projection? This is, does it have a name?
It's We Are Bristol Bay.
We Are Bristol Bay.
It's part of Elizabeth. It's the campaign that they've been creating with Salmon State.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I think what's been really fun about the We Are Bristol Bay slideshow that'll be projected tonight is it's really been a collaborative project and a really organic project that's emerged from conversations that I've been having with commercial fishermen and businesses in Alaska and Corey as well. And I think with the threat of the proposed pebble mine in Bristol Bay really getting momentum and kind of coming back to life over the next year, a lot of folks connected to Bristol Bay through fishing have been trying to figure out what can they do and how can they help raise awareness at this really critical time. And so with Fisher Poets coming up, we were thinking, well, you know, what a perfect place to, you know, not just get people educated on how they can be involved, but really celebrate Bristol Bay and celebrate just the big, diverse community that it is. And you don't have to live in Bristol Bay or even fish in Bristol Bay to appreciate it and care about it. So I've been working with Salmon Sisters and Drifter's Fish. And, you know, we're trying to figure out how can we bring Bristol Bay to Astoria, and photos was kind of the obvious way, and we figured, okay, well, we know
make
someone who
big.
Knows how to take photos and make them big. So it's really been a shared project, which has been fun.
Nice. So folks are going to be able to just walk right, stand in front of it, the wall. This is right by Imogen. It's literally on the corner of 11th and Marine Drive. During Art Walk, there have been projections there before. If you don't know what I'm talking about, it is the opposite from the way people are driving, so it's not dangerous. But
the last two Fisher Poets, I put together a projection on my truck and projected on that wall, mostly film footage, and that was sort of really impromptu. It was I've never done these kind of projections before. I thought it'd be really fun to just find a spot and add a little visuals to the Fisher Poets thing. So it was all motion footage I've just shot on all these various fishing trips I've been on. But this year I thought it would be really nice to open it up to several photographers from and do a themed thing on Bristol Bay. So it's going to be photographers like Chris Miller, Kai Raymond, Marty Machado, Charles Espe, Bob Walthrop, myself, and a few others in there.
Is it still photography then?
It's all still photography this time, yeah. And they're all fishermen that are kind of photographing their experience in the bay.
Nice. Yeah. So I remember the first time I and everybody else were all looking at this wall going, where are these pictures coming from? Because we couldn't find anything, and then it turned out it's this little projector on a truck or something.
Yeah.
Great fun.
Yeah.
So don't miss that either. Okay. Corey Arnold, exhibit at Imogen, 4 o'clock today is the reception. And Elizabeth is going to be giving her workshop tomorrow at the Heritage Museum at 11:30. Thank you both so much for coming in. I'm going to put on a little bit of music. And then I have another Bristol Bay person right here. And a musician out there and a poet over there. It's Fisher Poet Weekend. Thanks so much for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
La pêche sera bonne, amis partons sans bruit. La lune qui rayonne éclairera la nuit. Il faut qu'avant l'aurore nous soyons de retour pour sommeiller encore avant qu'il soit grand jour. Partons, la mer est belle, en bas comme nous pêcheurs. Quittons notre nacelle, rameaux avec ordure. Au mât, ils sont les voiles, le ciel est pur et beau. Je vois briller l'étoile qui guide le matelot. Ainsi parlait mon père quand il quitta le port. Il ne s'attendait guère à y trouver la mort. Ce fut un jour d'orage, il fut surpris soudain. Et jette au rivage à son cruel destin. Partons, la mer est belle, embarquons-nous pêcheurs. Quittons notre nacelle, rameaux avec ordure. Au mât hissé les voiles, le ciel est pur et beau. Je vois briller l'étoile qui guide les matelots. Je n'ai plus qu'une mère qui ne possède rien. Elle est dans la misère et n'a que mon soutien. Ramon, Ramon, bien vite, oh, je la vois là-bas. Je vais courir de suite, me jeter dans ses bras. Partons, la mer est belle, embarquons-nous pêcheurs. Quittons notre nacelle, rameaux avec ordure. Au mât qui sont les voiles, le ciel est pur et beau. Je vois briller l'étoile
Qu'est-il le matelot?
That's from an album that Mary Garvey, bless her heart and her skills, has put together yet another album. She's amazing. Codfish in the Spring of the Year, sung by various maritime singers, and it's got a delightful photo on the front. A tribute to cod fishers around the world, past, present, and future. All right, so it's not salmon, but hey, it's a beautiful album, and what we just heard was Pourtant la mer est belle. Ah, yes. The sea is beautiful. By Chris Rowe, and it's apparently a traditional piece. And all copyrights and performances are property of the artists. We want you to know that. It's important when you record other people's music that you get permission and give them credit and even money, if there's any money involved. What a concept. Okay, well, I've got three more guests here. I've got them all in the room because that's the way Fisher Poets is, just masses of people and I'm in here. And so Elma Burnham is here from Bristol Bay. Originally. Not originally, but that's...
Part-time in Bristol Bay, yeah.
Part-time.
I'm coming today from Bellingham, Washington.
And that's where you're living now?
Yep, pretty much. I spend my off-seasons there.
Oh, are you still fishing in Bristol Bay?
I'll go back this summer, yeah. I took a break last summer, but I'll be back this June.
Okay. Let me just introduce the others, and then we're going to swing back to Elma. I have Larry Kaplan here from Essex, Connecticut, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Larry is, oh gosh, if you go to a website, you'll see all these accolades. It would be embarrassing, except they're not about me, so I don't have to get embarrassed. But one of the best song makers in the folk song revival, that was from Sandy Patton, from Folk Legacy. And you folkies out there, you know what I'm talking about. And Larry is here because he's got a ballads, and I jotted down, and you can correct or change, profound observations of history and contemporary life and the people who live it. Is that?
Yeah, I better make a disclaimer. I didn't write any of that stuff, so
right.
Just other people.
Somebody wrote it.
But it's an honor to hear that. Yeah, no,
yeah.
The ballad is a simple concept. It's a story, and songs can be stories. That's traditionally what you'd call a ballad, but
and you create ballads.
Yeah, stories. I and that's why I feel so comfortable in the Fisher Poets world, because this is where poetry and prose tell the stories of working fishermen in the sea.
Well, you'd swear that I gave him those lines to lead right into my third guest, who's here, is Dave Densmore. Everybody local knows Dave. Anybody who's done anything in the fishing world or the Fisher Poets knows Dave Densmore. We are very happy to have him as one of our resident poets. And Dave is a fisherman for life, a poet, a storyteller, and the stories are getting more and more. Am I right, Dave? Your
yes.
life is...
Yes, I'm glad you made the designation there. I'm a fisherman first, and anything else second. But poet, and now my fourth book I just got out is all short stories about growing up out in Aleutians and other places. So.
And it's called Growing Up Fishy. And when did it come out? Is it out yet?
Yep.
Okay.
About 3 days ago. Oh. It's hot off the press.
Very smart. Right in time for Fisher Poets.
Well, I use Fisher Poets as my deadline. Otherwise, I'll procrastinate.
Right.
There's boats I need to work on right. and nets I need to hang. So if I have Fisher Poets as a deadline, then I discipline myself a little bit.
I think you are not alone. I have a feeling that there are about 100 people who have come from all over the country and beyond who have the same thing. This FPG is like, oh my God, I only have a month. Let's get going.
You're right.
So what I'm going to ask is that you guys listen to each other. I'm going to ask Elma to tell us a little bit about herself. And you guys can kick in on the questions too.
Sure.
So feel free. You want to close that door so we can have just our voices on the air. There are five of us in the studio. That's probably enough. So, Elma, where did you grow up?
I grew up in southeastern New England, just off the coast of Connecticut, on a little island, actually.
Did you know that she was from Connecticut, too?
We just found out.
Yeah. That's sweet. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness.
And, of course, we knew mutual friends there. So.
Right, right. And then now you've been fishing in Bristol Bay, which mm-hmm. is what Corey and Elizabeth were just talking about.
Yep.
Had you known either of them before?
I met them through this event, this weekend, I think,
okay.
more or less, and the connection that this weekend and the commercial fishing industry's brought
right.
all of us.
Yeah. Right. And I think that was the original mission of Fisher Poets Gathering, yeah. was to bring commercial fisher folks together. It wasn't mm-hmm. meant to be a tourist attraction, God knows. And it wasn't meant to make big bucks for anybody. It was meant to bring people together who have something in common and who are working hard most of the time. Like Corey was saying, when he wanted to take pictures, but he had to be working on the boat. And so this weekend is just for enjoying one another, meeting up with old mm-hmm. friends, making new friends, and sharing some of the poignant moments and the fun moments that go on.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think before we talk some more, maybe Larry, you could play us a song.
Sure.
And not too long, a song.
Mm-hmm.
And then I
mm-hmm.
want to hear from Elma, and then we'll go back and forth. Okay. Let's swing that mic into your guitar.
Oh, thanks. You know, I was just listening to talk about Mary Garvey, who I just spoke with a little while ago, and this song is actually on that album about cod fishing. It comes from the lore of Martha's Vineyard. A friend of mine, Gail Huntington, who really was a great collector of folk songs, used to drive us around the island, and my wife and me, and show us things that he thought were gone, but we looked at them and they still were there, probably the way they were 200 years ago. So this song's called Song for Gail. Blue skies, south wind, fish jumping into your hand. What a time to be working, old Nantucket Sound. The island into the mainland, worn out, smelling of bait, you'd come home by the end of the day, and the sun over west chopped those warm summer breezes, made you think it would never change. Get me my fiddle, we'll sing all the old songs. Take the high notes and I'll sing the low. Good times and hard times, they're worth all the telling. It won't matter to me if you sing them that well. I remember the time when you worked for a living, pushing hard just to get back to shore. When you busted your back or you just wouldn't eat, they don't talk much of that anymore. When you sat with the old folks, fell asleep from their stories, stayed awake with the howling winds, sang your songs till the children were all tucked away warm, and the night tides come rolling back in. Get me my fiddle, we'll sing all the old songs. You take the high notes, and I'll sing the low. Good times and hard times, they're worth all the telling. It won't matter to me
if you sing them that well. Blue skies, south wind, fish jumping into your hands. What a time to be working old Nantucket Sound, from the island into the mainland. Get me my fiddle, we'll sing all the old songs. Now you take the high notes and I'll sing the low. Good times and hard times, they're worth all the telling. It won't matter to me if you sing them that well.
Mm-hmm. Lovely, lovely. Go ahead and grab that mic back now. And so, Elma.
Yeah.
How do you feel about music?
Well, that's a fun song to hear. It reminds me of, I mean, although Martha's Vineyard and Nantucket are both places I've gone to visit and not too far from where I grew up. So it's fun to have another New Englander.
That's sweet. And this was unintentional, of course. So, and your work these days, and I was excited to read about you, is a mixture. You fish at one point, but apparently you have been inspired to, my notes, celebrate, support, and empower women who work on the water.
Exactly.
How long have you been working on the water yourself?
I first went to Bristol Bay when I was 18 as a nanny for my dad's godson family. My Alaska connections, despite growing up in New England, start with my parents who spent the 80s there.
80s where?
In Anchorage, yep.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Fishing in Cook Inlet and working all throughout Alaska, yeah. So working on the water when I was 18, but I really did grow up on the water. I commuted to high school by boat and all that.
What? Where did you live?
So Fisher's Island is a small island off the coast of Connecticut, and there is a school there, but I started commuting off-island to the mainland for school, to New London, Connecticut.
What a trip. Albert, who did the folk show this morning, when he had three women guests, including Mary Garvey, and the men guests didn't show up, apparently. They didn't make it to Astoria.
Yeah, I'm glad I don't have to just travel from Bellingham today, not
That's right.
Today.
But he lived, he grew up on
Block Island.
Block Island, right, with John Campbell. And so when
also
you start
in the
talking,
neighborhood.
Yeah.
And John calls it the Ile de Bloc.
Yeah. Sounds like something John would say, right? So, So I have no idea how old you are now. So when you say you started when you were 18.
Yeah, I'm 26. So I fished for 7 years in Bristol Bay, took a season off, and I'm signed up to go back. Set netting, like Corey does in Bristol Bay as well.
Okay, and we got a good explanation this morning about set netting, too, because there are some misunderstandings by a lot of people. We hear all these words, and we non-fisher people, you know. So, but you've got the politics in there, but you're also doing some hardcore work, marketing and consulting. What's that about?
Yeah, so
in the fishing industry.
I wear a couple hats. One is working with a direct marketer from Bristol Bay who ships his catch back to Pennsylvania. Their company's called Wild for Salmon. So from Bellingham, I work with them remotely to help tell the story of wild Bristol Bay salmon and sell it on the East Coast.
So you're in Bellingham. They're in Alaska. And the buyers are in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, they spend their summers in Alaska, then bring it back to Pennsylvania and have a storefront and a distribution facility. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
And then I work with the Wild Film also, which is a movie coming out about Bristol Bay this summer and Pebble Mine. So another hat.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. So Elizabeth was sitting here talking about Pebble Mine. And it's so integrated.
I think these days it's hard to talk about Bristol Bay without talking about Pebble Mine. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. And unfortunately, we thought it was on the way down until the election. What do you love about fishing? Did you just grow up so you never even thought about it?
I don't know. It definitely requires some thought. I love fishing because I love being on the water, I think is the biggest part. that is where I grew up, is that part. I think being out, there's not much like spending your full days or nights or both on the water. And then getting to participate in this fishery that we all believe in, as Elizabeth said, for good reason, is just a really privileged and humbling experience. So that's another thing I love.
And is that what keeps you in Alaska versus going back to the East Coast?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what the draw is, but it's very strong. I love the East Coast. I love going home, but I haven't been back in a couple years now. I mean, I go to visit, obviously, but mm-hmm. it's it was my home, but I don't know if it's – I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you got time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to not let you off the hook. Oh, I didn't do that on purpose. I swear I didn't do it. But I do want to move right over to Dave because just what you were just saying, and if I don't know whether you know his history, but he's been, and he's not 26, not even close. So, Dave, you've been come a little bit closer to the, not close to the age, but closer to the mic. And what do you love about fishing?
Well, for one thing, I like the independent lifestyle. Once you clear land, there's nobody telling you what to do, pretty much. There's rules you have to go by, of course. But it's an independent lifestyle. And I grew up out in Aleutians where we were hundreds of miles from a doctor or from any kind of a police force or anything else. So I grew up really self-reliant and independent. And that's one of the big things about commercial fishing. And it keeps me on the ocean. And I just flat love the ocean. As you know, I have several boats, but I also live on a sailboat. So it's... I have to be totally saturated in salt water, otherwise I'm not very happy.
It keeps you pickled and young.
Yeah.
And productive, speaking of which, you've got your new book. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that? Because I understand it's not all about fishing, and it's not poetry.
It's not poetry, it's straight prose, and it... I wasn't born in Alaska. A lot of people think I was because I am a hardcore Alaskan. But it's just that Alaska has a way of, and the Pacific Northwest has a way of getting in your blood. And it just, you have to have it. You have to have it.
Mm-hmm.
And
we got a lot of nods going on in this room, including mine.
Yeah.
Because I'm from the East Coast, too.
So it, I lost my train of thought, but... Oh, the book is it starts out in Colorado. My dad was a foreman on a ranch. My dad did a lot of different stuff. He cowboyed. He worked in oil fields. He was a professional fighter. He ran moonshine at one time.
Oh, good.
He'd done. But when he went to Alaska, he went as a missionary.
My God!
So it was quite a big step. But he was. My folks were different than a lot of missionaries you see portrayed in movies and stuff. They didn't condemn anybody. They respected everybody's beliefs and so on. And it just basically they were saying this is the way we live. And if it gives you more peace than what you have, why here we are.
So did you write a story from moonshine to missionary?
No, this one is actually my dad is through a lot of it, but it was about me. I think one of the stories is In Search of Danger, which. We were on the ranch, and Dad had come home and told Mom that they'd just got a young bull that was really dangerous. They had him in a corral. Well, I wasn't supposed to go over to the main ranch. We had our own little place. I had to sneak away and see that bull because I was really looking for danger by then because everything I wanted to do, Mom told me it was too dangerous.
Right.
So I was constantly trying to figure out what the hell that was. So I went over there, and all I saw was just an old bull standing in the corral, so I went and got a shovel and crawled in there with him and whacked him in the nose. And he just snorted and backed up a little bit, so I whacked him again. Then he started pawing and throwing his head around. I thought that was really cool, but my dad came out of the barn, saw me in there, and made me get out of there.
Yeah, sure.
But, so that's one of the stories, but mostly they're about the Aleutians and so on.
Well, do you have a short one that you could read us?
Sure.
Yeah.
It might be several minutes. Okay.
We can do that. Yeah.
All right. This is a fishing story. It's called Dreamer. The old Chrysler Crown purred smoothly below us. The sun smiled down on a glassy sea as the Antwin slipped along crossing Shelikov Strait. Fishing had been very slow around Kodiak Island, and our skipper, Johnny Malutin, had decided to try a new area. grotesquely eroded, weather-battered volcanic mountains of the Alaska Peninsula loomed ahead as the island of Kodiak slipped farther astern. Dad was cooking lunch, Pete was in his bunk taking a nap, and Johnny was on the flying bridge nursing a cup of coffee, lost in his own thoughts. I sat there beside him for a while, wishing he'd offer me the wheel, but he seemed very contented right where he was. He just didn't seem to know or care how I itched to be on that flying bridge by myself steering that boat towards whatever waited in the bays ahead. At 12 years old, I was the youngest member of the crew, and although I was skiff man, the position I felt right below skipper, I knew better than to interrupt Johnny's reverie. The skiff I worked, which held one end of the net when we were fishing, was snugged up tight to the stern. It dawned on me if Johnny wouldn't give up his boat, I still had mine. In its stern was stacked the lead, a 300-foot-long net that I laid out from the beach so the big boat and net didn't have to get too close into the shallows. Off the bridge, across the deck, over the pile of net, and I was in my skiff, wheel in hand. Of course, the same boat was towing the skiff, but that didn't get in the way of my daydreams. Even at 12, I knew it wouldn't be much longer until I had my own boat. So there I was, sitting in that skiff, towing along behind the big boat, lost my own daydreams. Well, of course, my boat would have to have a mast and boom, but that skiff didn't. I soon fixed that, though. There was an oar in the skiff, and with some scraps of line, I soon had a mast rigged. That was great, but as I settled down to the steering wheel again, I realized I couldn't sail without a boom, so the plunger pole was soon rigged off the mast. Now, that was more like it. There I sat beneath my rigging, charging for the mainland to wrap up the biggest set of the year. It was just too quiet back there astern the boat, so I started my own engine. Yeah, now we're in business. But someone else might be racing for that same school of fish. I couldn't have that, so I threw the boat in gear and opened the throttle wide. No one was going to beat me to those fish. They were mine. I scrunched tensely over the wheel, eye on those jumping fish right ahead, pushing that throttle for all I was worth. I was almost there. Almost had him, and suddenly I realized something was badly amiss. Johnny was up on the real flying bridge, frantically turning the wheel this way and that. He spun around and looked at me, shaking his head, and as I came out of my daydream, boy, he looked mad, and as our eyes met, I realized I'd been pushing at him, and as he fought for control and tried to figure out what was happening, we were charging along in a very erratic course. Heck, I'd been running for a big school of fish. I'd completely forgot there was a real seine boat tied off my bow ahead of me. I immediately idled the engine back down, jerked it out of gear, shut the engine off, and tried to just disappear. Johnny didn't say anything, just started laughing and turned to get back on course. He was that kind of great skipper. Earlier in the season, he'd stood up to the cannery to own the boat when they wanted me off because I was too young. Johnny'd radioed back that if I had to go, we would all go and they could have their boat back. I stayed. I quickly dismantled that makeshift rigging and tried to be as invisible as I could for the next few hours. Almost exactly 1 year later, I shook hands on the purchase of my first seine boat gear.
Oh, sweet, 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 sweet. All right. So, when are you going to be reading?
Let's see. I read tonight. I close the Wet Dog at 10 o'clock. And then tomorrow night, Toby Sullivan and I split the MC duties at the Liberty Theater. And then I close that at 10 o'clock.
Okay. And remember, folks, that Coast Community Radio is broadcasting from the Liberty Theater this year. Mm. And it's a gorgeous place. The sound is great. I think everybody's going to enjoy being there. So,
I'm going to have something a little bit different for tomorrow night. It's going to be about Astoria, but the very early days. It's series of poems.
Oh, boy.
I wrote them for the bicentennial.
Oh, cool. Okay. Well, we'll look forward to that. Okay. I want to go back to Elma, and I wanted to find out. You're doing a workshop also tomorrow, is it?
Yep. Tomorrow at 1:30 at the Heritage Center.
At the Heritage Museum.
Yeah.
1:30 to 3:00. And why? This is the Strength of the Tides. Why did you start that?
Yeah, Strength of the Tides is the community organization I started that looks to support and empower women who work on the water. And I just think there's a great opportunity for the community of women who do this kind of work to learn from each other and support each other in doing that, as well as getting our peers of other identities on that same on board as well. So tomorrow's workshop is just about explaining the mission of the project, letting folks discuss amongst themselves and then share experiences together, and hopefully leaving with ideas and resources about how to support each other and the women specifically who take on this work.
Did you study communications by any chance?
No. I was a French major. That's a version
of
communication.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And I played a French song.
You did, yeah.
How do you... It's so cosmic around here. It makes me crazy. I usually say organic, but today it's cosmic. So the organization is out of Bellingham?
Yeah, but I mean, it's really the biggest part of the organization happens online. We have an Instagram that features a woman who works on the water every week. And then this started that portion in July. So every week since July, we've featured a woman who works on the water in different industries and fisheries. And then just in 2018, we started sharing a second woman a week who supports the project in some other way, but of course has her own strengths.
So if someone wants to get involved in this or wants to contact,
if you're in town, you can come to the workshop tomorrow. Right. I'd love to grow this community. And then otherwise we're on platforms as Strength of the Tides. And the full phrase is the strength of the tides is hers also.
So someone can write that on their computer.
Yeah, so just reach out. Yeah, reach out on Facebook or Instagram. The website is strengthofthetides.org.
Okay, Strength of the Tide. That I can handle. Mm-hmm. All those other
all one word
things.
strengthofthetides.org.
Right, right. And the workshop is tomorrow, 1:30 to 3:00 at the Heritage Museum.
Yep.
And I think they're talking about the one on 16th Street. So that's a wonderful building also for getting together, and there are terrific exhibits there as well. Larry, you got a song for us maybe?
Sure.
All right.
You know, I'm not a commercial fisherman, but I did spend many years working and restoring old schooners and those historic vessels that still we call windjammers today. And what I took from that experience, and it was an intense learning experience, to say the least, was to respect but also fear the core of my being, the sea. I mean, that's a mighty powerful thing out there. And it's every year in every community that's by the water where there are losses and tragic losses. It affects a whole community. I came back from one year feeling sort of a healthy respect because I'd witnessed a tragedy. But winter February I was in Providence and wrote this song, just made it up. Then in the paper a few days later was a story of literally the same incident. Now there was no other way to explain it except to say that these things are prevalent; they happen enough. And the song's called "Get Her Into Shore," and if I can.
Larry Kaplan from Essex, Connecticut.
Always set our traps in the bitter cold. On the third day of the year, there was three of us then. We were the youngest of 10, three for lines and one to steer. When it blows northeast on the George's bank, you don't like to take your time. But the engine was old, it didn't like the cold, and we fell back on our lines. Get her into shore, she can't take it anymore. She's too far from home, it's gonna break her bones. Can't you get her into shore? Jack throws a switch. He says, you son of a bitch, what the hell do you think you're doing? Well, you drug us to the poorhouse too many times. You ain't taking us to our ruin. But the line went slack, we saw the stern turn back, and we started up again. But she just tightened up, and I knew we were stuck, lying broadside in the wind. Get her into shore, she can't take it anymore. She's too far from home, it's gonna break her bones. Can't you get her into shore? Tom picks up an axe, cuts us free from the traps he swung so hard he smashed the rail. Then he looks hard at me, and he spits in the sea. His face was whiter than the hail. We tried her again, gave her all that we could, and we felt that screw turn round. And I remember I prayed for some more steerage way on that black and ugly ground. Get her into shore, she can't take it anymore. She's too far from home, it's gonna break her bones. Can't you get her into shore? Jack puts her heart over, sort of run with the tide, but she fell into the trough, and with her side to the swell, she just leaned in and fell, and I knew we all were lost. And all that I saw was that rotten old keel with that line flung across her stern, but I couldn't hold to her, and I couldn't go down. I just wished I'd never been born. Get her into shore, she can't take it anymore. She's too far from home, it's gonna break her bones. Can't you get her into shore? Well, the tide runs hard in the winter time. You're a fool to go and try. God help the poor man who was born on the sea. God save the poor ones who die.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of poignancy as it goes on at this it's a festival. It's very joyful. But part of that is sharing the pain as well. And, yeah, thank you, Larry. My guests, Larry Kaplan, whom you just heard on the guitar, Elma Burnham, the other woman in the room, and Dave Densmore, whose voice is very easy to identify. One of a kind. One of a kind. So, folks, here's the deal. If you live locally, grab the Coast Weekend. There is an insert or an excerpt. I'm not sure what it's called. You pull it out, and it's got the entire schedule on it. Or you can go over to the Gear Shack. It's 1174 Commercial between 11th and 12th, right two doors down from Riversea. And get the schedule. Check out the fabulous auction where the money all goes to Fisher Poets, and books and artwork and all kinds of good things. Dave, your book's going to be there?
Yes.
Okay, your book is there. And Larry, your music is there.
Yeah.
Elma, you got anything to, any merch?
Not in the Gear Shack, no. Wasn't thinking. Yeah. I have my tank tops in the back of my car, though, if you find me. Identify me by my voice.
She's a beautiful, young, long red hair, so look for her. And I have nothing to sell. I'm here just to enjoy, but I will be working. And if you have some spare time, go over to the Gear Shack and ask them if they still need you, because as of this morning, they still needed a few people to help out. Venues all over town, more than ever before. And that's the Fisher Poets Gathering. I have a little music queued up which has nothing to do with Fisher Poets. And I'm going to put it on because these folks, first let me just say thank you so much for coming.
Thanks
all
for
three
having
of
us.
You. And we'll see you on stage or wherever. This music is from the Cabin Project, and they're going to be at the Sou'wester this weekend. I want to tell you what else is going on. Of course, I mentioned the Seaside Jazz Festival. It's fabulous. The Coaster, Fit to Kill, Friday and Saturday. This is the last weekend. Seaside High School has High School Musical, Friday and Saturday and Thursday at 7 o'clock. NCRD is featuring Born Yesterday, the River Bend Players, Friday and Saturday, 7, 2 o'clock on Sunday. Hoffman has stuff going on all over the place, art, film festival, community concert. On Thursday, they have Liz Cole giving stories for grown-ups. I do want to tell you, the Astor Street Opera Company, Peter Pan at 2 o'clock Saturday and Sunday. Troll Radio Review is upstairs at the Fort George, and we'll be full of Fisher singers and poets as well. And Sunday, Rising Tide Productions has auditions for the play Orphans. That's with George Zunza, 3 o'clock at Neat Arts Fire Hall. Folks, I'm out of time. Stay tuned. Coast Community Radio.